Good morning. You've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here this morning with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
Just great. Yeah. It's a beautiful July 3rd.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect out there.
Heading into a, it looks like a fabulous Independence Day weekend ahead of us.
Yeah. Not too hot.
No.
But sunny. Yeah, it can be nice.
Yep. It should be, it should be very nice. It should be a fun weekend for all. The town is very busy out there.
Yeah. Bustling.
Also in the studio with us this morning is Zach Hagedone, the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. How's your foot?
I am not wearing a boot.
I noticed that
yesterday.
Yeah.
So I hobbled down here a little bit quicker than I normally hobble.
Okay. In medical news, Zach Hagedone
is out of the boot.
For your health.
Yeah. We have a chock full show today. It's been a busy week here in Sandpoint, Idaho, and in our county and area. Our top story today is out of the Lake Pendre School District. The Concerned Citizens for LPOHS Coalition, LPOHS being the Lake Pendre High School. This is a coalition led by former West Bonner County School District, that is not Lake Pendre School District, Superintendent Jackie Branham. This group has lodged a formal grievance against Lake Pendre School District just on June 30th, I believe. The grievance is over the school district's plan to move Lake Pendre High School from its current campus on Boyer Avenue to a location on the Division Street campus that hosts Sandpoint High School and Sandpoint Middle School. The complaint, filed with the Idaho Department of Education and the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Special Education Programs, demands that the district cease all relocation efforts and engage in an independent third-party forensic audit of finances and student attendance and graduation records, among other requirements. It further alleges violation of the Idaho Open Meeting Law and the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, as well as misallocated public funds and falsified attendance data. The board, the Lake Pendre School District board, will vote on July 14th as the grievance requests of them at 5 p.m. at their regular meeting on whether or not to move Lake Pendre High School to that other location. That meeting probably will be well attended and covered in the paper. Sansari Mitchell wrote the story in this week's Sandpoint Reader, and you can find it on newsstands everywhere for free if you want to read up on it. And we'll have Sansari back hopefully next week to talk about it before that important meeting on July 14th. And in other important local news, the court case against local business Cochava has come to a conclusion. Cochava and its subsidiary have been ordered by a district court to stop collecting and selling sensitive data. This court case has been ongoing for 4 years and now reaches a conclusion as issued by Idaho District Court Judge B. Lynn Windmill. Zach, you wrote the story on this one.
I did.
That court order has been issued. Is this the actual conclusion of the court case, or will Cochava be appealing and this story on goes on?
Well, that's hard to say. They didn't respond to any request for comment from me last week.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if past is prelude, this like you mentioned, this case has gone on for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The bulk of the reason it went on for 4 years was a lot of motions and counter motions, and it's been pretty thoroughly litigated. And this conclusion looks pretty conclusive.
Okay.
And it doesn't, as far as I could tell, it doesn't include any sort of financial penalties or levy any fines or anything like that. Mostly what it appears to be is a whole very robust list of sort of protection policies that the company has to put in place to report on if any third-party incidents occur where sensitive location data is sold. They have to create a new position, like a chief privacy officer or chief compliance officer, that will sort of oversee that process. mm-hmm. of vetting the kind of data that they have and where it goes and who gets a hold of it. They have to report to the board once every 12 months. There's a whole list of other reporting requirements. And, of course, the ultimate point being a prohibition or a ban on the company or its subsidiary from selling that data to anybody else without – and there's a caveat – without the express affirmative consent of the user. Mm-hmm. And what that case turned on was that notion of, you know, affirmative consent. And the court found, you know, that the Federal Trade Commission's argument in the complaint they filed in 2022 was that – while Kochava contended it was buying that data from like Apple and Android and other companies, you know, that people had consented to give their data to, Kochava said they were buying it from those sources, which implied consent, and then they were reselling it as part of its sort of advertising client services so that people that bought the tranches of data that Kochava had purchased would then use that data to, you know, apply to their own products to see like, well, does this advertisement work? Are people actually going to this store? Does this billboard drive business? Stuff like that. Well, the FTC said those people didn't – they might have consented to give their data to Apple or Android, but they didn't consent to that you would buy it and then sell it to, you know, who knows for whatever purposes. And that's what the court ultimately said. Yeah, that's not proper. It's a violation of the FTC Act.
Hmm. So how much will all this upset their business model?
Well, I mean, a big chunk of what they do is – you know, serve clients with mm-hmm. data that they can use to monitor their advertising campaigns. So it puts a lot of really stringent guardrails around, you know, sort of the basic functioning of that. You know, the affirmative consent portion of it is that it's going to have to be incredibly obvious to anyone that this is what's going to happen with your data. So do you want us to, do you consent or not? And that might sound like a little thing, but, you know, you put a barrier like that up on a website, you know, it's gonna naturally result in people saying no yeah. a lot more often than they would have.
A lot of people. So is this set a precedent for other data companies like that?
Yeah, I mean that's when I initially reported this in 2022 when the complaint first came down. I actually met with Kochava representatives and spoke with their, you know, public information people. And one of the arguments that I heard repeatedly was that, you know, the FTC was making Kochava an example. Because they were, you know, a relatively small company in the context of data brokers mm-hmm. worldwide, and they felt like they were kind of an easy target for FTC to go after. And if the FTC won in the case, which they ultimately did, it would send a message to other companies that they needed to have much stricter data control and handling policies. Now, I wasn't able to find a whole lot of third-party analysis of the case. It was kind of interesting. Like, it didn't seem to make a lot of big waves, but... Hmm. One group of analysis or analysts that I was able to cite from noted that it was part of an ongoing trend of tightening up these data controls at various companies. Because I mean, everything we do now is so, you know, data reliant. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're uploading all of our personal information all the time, and there's a lot of concern that, you know, we don't have control of it ultimately. Even if we do say, yeah, I consent, I mean, who knows where it goes, sort of downstream. So like Ford Motor Company got hit with something similar, and OnStar, because they were taking their own customers' data mm-hmm. and then selling it or mm-hmm. using it, you know, in ways that the customers didn't affirmatively consent to. And then, you know, other sort of data broker firms have also been hit with, you know, similar complaints and rulings. But yeah, the trend began under the Biden administration and has continued, though slowed, under the Trump administration. And if you remember back when, you know, Trump first got into his second term, there was a lot of talk about like big data and how we got to clamp down on these companies selling our data. So it was sort of a feature of the campaign that has gotten lost in the storm and fury mm-hmm. of everything else that's happened in the administration. But it appears to still be somewhat of a priority for regulatory agencies to keep an eye on this.
Hmm. Is it... When we say affirmatively consent, I mean, everybody who uses any kind of software is familiar with that page of legal text
right.
that pops up right away that you almost everybody scrolls through, does not read, mm-hmm. gets to the bottom of and says, I agree, and then clicks on. Could this just be another, you know, another line in that block of text that says, you can also pass this on to Kochava? Or
I would hazard to speak on their behalf, but
yeah.
It seems to me like a reasonable assumption that any company that uses data as one of its commodities
mm-hmm.
is going to try to find however whatever way they can to make that as easy for people to miss as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I'm not speaking on for them. I don't have any idea what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But corporations just in general being what they are and what they do, I mean, they don't want people to say no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they're going to be required to at least make that more visible in mm-hmm. some way.
And no comment yet, at least to you or that we've seen in any of the other press from Cochava in response. But
No. They didn't respond to me, but, you know, who knows? If they do end up doing an appeal,
mm-hmm.
You know, we might hopefully get them to talk at that mm-hmm. point. And I guess we'll just wait and see. But after 4 years of, you know, fighting in the court with the FTC, I don't know what kind of appetite there would be to continue the struggle, but mm-hmm. who knows?
Well, let's move on to the story that has gathered all the attention, at least on social media, and a lot of conversation here in town.
Would that be, Jack?
Does it start with a P?
I think once again, it's time for us to have our exciting conversation about parking in the city of Sandpoint. The story is not news. This is not unexpected, or at least for those of us who've been reading the paper. I actually went back to the first time I saw in the Sandpoint Reader the new information on a potential new parking system was in January of 2025.
Right.
So this has been covered in the media for a year and a half, but it has seemingly suddenly come to the attention of some people.
Right.
The city council voted unanimously to adopt new fees, which include maximums for the city's paid parking program. The parking fee maximums $3 an hour for non-permit holders in all city-owned lots and up to $5 an hour for overstaying in the two-hour street parking zones. City residents can pay $20 a year for a permit to park in the city lots, and Bonner County residents can pay $35 a year to park in the city lots. Those permits went on sale on Monday, June 8th, and the new parking paid parking program went into effect on July 1st. That was just Wednesday. And it's been an exciting couple of days here in Sandpoint. There was a protest held on the day before it went into effect at the city parking.
That was actually the day.
Oh, that was the day.
Yeah, that was the day of.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, that was July 30th. That was July 1st. There was also a meeting of the Downtown Business Association. Or no, the... it was the Downtown Business Association meeting. Sorry, I'm getting my facts mixed up here and facts, dates, and times. But that was at Marigold Cafe the day before it went into effect. And the mayor, Jeremy Grimm, was in attendance there, as well as Planning and Community Development Director Jason Welker. And they addressed the Downtown Business Association and other members of the public who turned up to that meeting. I think for people who've been listening to this radio show and perhaps are listening now, this is not brand new. There's no brand new information about what the city has done.
No.
The plan is available on the city's website. You can see the graphic. I'm looking at the graphic here in the Sandpoint Reader, in the article under your byline, but a vocal group of local residents has come out in strong opposition to the rollout of the city parking plan. I think it's fair to say,
right? Well, up yeah. to and including a effort to recall Mayor Jeremy Grimm and what they refer to as the responsible council members. It's unclear yeah. responsible for what vote, when,
mm-hmm.
or what aspect.
The rollout being so controversial. I guess I'll start with this broad question: is that surprising to you, Zach? That the response to it has become so strong in just really seems like just these past couple of weeks that it's taken social media by storm. Are you surprised by the response?
On one level, yeah. About just how vociferous these people are, and just also how uninformed they were up until about a week ago. I mean, I've been in the journalism business for a long time, and this is not unusual that people will not pay attention to things for a very long time until the 11th hour and then get super angry about it. I mean, I'm thinking back to like the James E. Russell Sports Center, another one of those stories that we reported exhaustively for like more than a year. Right. And then suddenly when it came time to break ground, we had
all these
people show up saying like, well, I didn't know anything about this. Mm-hmm. Who approved this and what, mm-hmm. how is this happening? Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of a feature, I think, of human beings, is that they get busy and they don't pay attention. But this particular one is kind of shocking to me a little bit because of just how they don't get the basic facts of how it works and why it is in place and the purpose of it and just sort of basic details about, you know, where their data is being collected. You know, we were talking about Kochaba earlier, but one of the big fears among some of these people who are super opposed is that they're worried that if they input their information into one of these kiosks or they've, you know, put their information in to get a permit, then that data is going to get sold to, you know, some nefarious entity. But the city's been pretty clear, like they purchased those kiosks outright, instead of leasing them from the private company. And they've said this multiple times, it's on their website. And the purpose of buying them was, you know, A, so that it would be cheaper down the road. You know, you buy it up front, you don't have to pay the lease fees. You know, you're probably not going to see your lease agreement increase, whatever. And also it's, you know, cheaper in the long run than hiring new police officers to wander around and check cars. But the other thing was that buying the kiosks means that all the data is held by the city. Mm. It's not going anywhere. And, you know, they'll have a data retention policy. There's going to be all kinds of this similar sorts of guidelines that we were just talking about where, you know, they delete it over time. It's a municipal government. So, I mean, they're not going to sell it. I mean, they're not a for-profit corporation. So that part of it, you know, that people were so steamed about is just frankly not true. You know, the city's mm-hmm. going to be selling off everybody's data. Then they say, well, it could get hacked, you know, and that's always a possibility with everything. But I mean, how many times in a year do people upload their information onto the internet?
Yeah.
I mean,
or pay for something with your credit card.
You're always at risk mm-hmm. of that. Another anger point was the cashless nature of it. That one has a little bit more validity, in my opinion. This is just my opinion. Mm-hmm. That, you know, obviously the kiosks are totally cashless and I don't see how you're going to get around that. I mean, unless you put like a big box somewhere downtown where everybody puts their dollar bills in. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the permit that you get, I mean, people are saying, oh, I'm going to be able to walk into City Hall and give cash. I don't know if that's a possibility or not. So, I mean, that's one thing that people have raised a stink about. And it's like, well, okay. I mean, that maybe has some way to be worked out. There was another concern about, well, you know, why are we doing this year round? When we know that this town gets a little bit calmer during the winter, and the, you know, Welker at that June 30th meeting at Marigold was pretty, he's like, yeah, I mean, ask the council. I mean, see if they will be willing to just turn them off during the winter months. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's another thing that could be worked out. Mm-hmm. But by and large, you know, the folks that are angry about this, the most angry about this, especially on social media, they just want to be angry about it. So, and that's also a feature, I think, of just human beings is, you know, they come into these meetings like super hot under the collar and they don't really want to hear solutions. They just want to be angry about it. Mm-hmm. There's another element that kind of runs through the protests and the anger online that the city is turning its back on county residents. Like the county residents are angry that they have to pay more for sort of the permit, like $35 instead of $20. they're upset about the fact that that will be a barrier to the city beach for them. They say, why didn't we get a vote on this? How come we're having to pay money to park in Sandpoint and we don't live there? And the counter argument is like, well, you don't live here. So,
yeah,
I mean, the people who do live
here. It's how you contribute to the cost that the residents themselves have been completely shouldering.
Yeah. I mean, city residents pay all the taxes for the city, for the upkeep of all these infrastructure elements like City Beach, et cetera.
And the parks.
And the parks mm-hmm. and everything else that these people are saying that they want to use.
Streets, parking,
and
fire and police, all that.
Everything.
Falls on the city residents and the county residents who benefit from it when they're in town have not been contributing anything. So I walked by the protest on Wednesday.
Right, I saw you there.
Yeah.
I did as well.
We were all there.
Yeah, everybody
we were
about, check it out.
We were like a maybe an eighth of the number of people who were there, actually.
And so, yeah, because there was a pretty small turnout, you know, maybe 20, 25 people, which was kind of surprising to me because there's been hundreds and hundreds of people online that have been very critical of this whole thing. But I think a lot of the people online who are mad about it are not city residents. So right. maybe they said, well, I could go to the protest, but don't have a vote in the city, so it's not going to make much difference. Did you get a sense of how many of those people were residents, city residents there, or could you tell?
I spoke to a couple of folks, and I didn't necessarily ask to see their street addresses, but you know, I was told that one of the organizers was a Sandpoint resident, and I later learned that while she may have a Sandpoint address, she lives in the Selly Valley. So again, you know, not really a Sandpoint resident, isn't paying Sandpoint city taxes. I don't know. I mean, it's like anything else, you know, people get angry online and they get their keyboard warrior skills going, and it doesn't necessarily translate into the real world, but it's pretty easy and fun to get angry on the internet.
So at the Marigold meeting with right. mostly business folks, I understand, they had a meeting like that, oh, I don't know, a year ago,
right.
At that point, the city was considering that First Avenue, Second Avenue, parts of Cedar would be paid right from the go. You wouldn't get the 2 hours of free.
Right.
And the feedback from the business community there was, no, we got to continue 2 hours of free, which is the case. You can park still downtown 2 hours free on the street. What was the tenor of that meeting? Were the business people upset or opposed to this new policies?
That meeting was also pretty tense. In part because some of the people that I saw at the protest on the 1st were also in attendance on June 30th. I didn't know that at the time. But, among the most disruptive members of that meeting on June 30th were also the same people I saw on July 1st, essentially. And they were sort of shouting out questions and accusations and things. The business owners themselves did have a lot of concerns. There were worries about, like, well, my employees, where are they going to park? And the city has been pretty clear, like, well, I mean, we don't want employees parking in the 2 hour zones. Like, the 2 hour zones are supposed to be for customers to access merchants downtown. And the whole point of sort of making it paid, you know, in the 2 hour zone is to encourage that churn. And employees, they want them to actually be parking farther away in sort of the peripheral zones of downtown using the city lot. Or the 3 and 4 hour zones, you know, the 2 hour shuffle is the term that people use, you know, for like employees when you park to go to work
for many, many years
and you wait, you know, until your meter's almost up or the time limit's almost up or whatever. And then you run out and you grab your car and then you park somewhere else and then you go back to work and then you wait a while and then you run out and move your car again. I mean, we've all done this.
Yeah. It kind of kills productivity.
It does, but it's nice to take a little walk, I guess. But the city's response to that worry from business owners, like, what do I do with my employees? Like, where are they supposed to park? The response is like, well, they have to park farther away. And we want them to park farther away.
Most of the businesses should want that so the customers have easier access.
Yeah, and that's the argument that you hear from the city. Is like, yeah, you want these spots to be moving and turning over. It's just like a restaurant, you want your tables to turn over so you get more people coming in to spend money. That is a feature of the plan, is to get employees to park farther away. Mm-hmm.
I think for listeners who we probably have some brand new listeners to this program today. I mean, who knows, maybe just visitors from out of town here for the holiday weekend, but also people who have not been following this story and suddenly have become interested. Going back to basics, why did the city decide to change its parking plan?
Right.
And that's really the question that you were starting to answer there in part, is for one thing to increase that turnover of the more precious spots on like First Avenue and Cedar Street and those busy parking spots, and move cars into, I guess, less prime parking spots.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so the city was engaged in all kinds of different planning efforts over the years. Mm-hmm. And one of those big plans was parking management. And they came up with a plan. It was even more than a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And as part of that plan, they did a bunch of data collection. You know, they had people come in and like analyze how the spots were being used, which ones were the most high traffic, which ones weren't being used at all. And the information that the city ended up getting out of that study was that we had a lot of people parking like right downtown, like it was something like 97% or whatever. I forget exactly what the number was, but it was in the high 90s of the number of spots that were taken up on any given moment during, especially the high seasons in downtown. And it left, you know, something like 6 or 8 open spots on any given time. Mm-hmm. And they said that isn't good. I mean, we need people to be moving in and out of these spots so that customers can get a place to get into the stores. So that was one thing they saw. And then there was all these other spots, even just like 2 or 3 blocks away, that were completely vacant all the time. And so the idea being was they wanted to sort of rebalance the parking stall usage so that it wasn't just totally concentrated on the downtown core. And we have all these other spots out here that aren't being used at all. And, you know, and there's also a cost element to this. I mean, we're maintaining all these parking spaces on the street that no one is using. So if you put in some sort of incentives and also disincentives to sort of get people to move around a little more and have a more balanced usage percentage on these spots, then it's better for everyone. It's better for the business owners because they get more customer traffic. It's better for the city because this infrastructure is actually being used. So that was one component of it, was to rebalance the parking usage. The other part was, and that part isn't related to revenue. This is something else that people have been kind of angry about. Like, you know, a lot of these folks that are really angry are saying like, well, why are you taxing us? Why are you, you know, this is, it's a money grab. You know, the city's trying to steal our hard earned dollars, you know, and all this other stuff.
That does seem like the most common.
Yeah.
Yeah. The focus point of most of the ire is that we already pay our property taxes. Why do we have to pay more
exactly.
for parking?
And a lot of implications that the council is getting a kickback.
Yeah. Again, like, also completely not true.
Yeah.
But so the idea that the component of rebalancing the parking usage is not a revenue generator. That's not intended to be a revenue generator. And the city's been very clear about this. They're not trying to make money off of people parking downtown or even really with the permits for residents. I mean, the $20 a year isn't actually making any money for the city.
It's covering the cost of the program.
So that's, you know, that part of it is sort of revenue neutral. But things can be two things, which people have a hard time understanding sometimes. There is a revenue generating component to the plan, which is the City Beach parking and some of the waterfront lots, you know, the high demand recreational places. Mm-hmm. So that's where the city is hoping to make some money off of the plan. So you have revenue neutral for mm-hmm. sort of the downtown parking and the street parking, you know, in our sort of business district. That's revenue neutral, revenue generating at places like City Beach mm-hmm. and for the boat launch fees mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's intended to land more heavily on out of town visitors. So again, I mean, the $20 a year thing isn't making the city any money, but if you don't live in the county and you can't even get the $35 a year permit, you're coming from Spokane or Coeur d'Alene or even Bonners, you're paying that hourly rate. And that's where they hope to make, you know, something like $300,000 or whatever. They have estimated a pretty healthy chunk of change to come from just that recreational use.
And they actually have a new plan to renovate the City Beach parking lot.
Yeah,
they intend to use that money mm-hmm. for that purpose. So you can actually see this is where the money's going to be going.
Yeah, and so that's that. The purpose of that component of the plan is to have a revenue stream that can be, you know, sort of reapplied to maintain the infrastructure that's being used, mm-hmm. which is, you know, sort of the ideal for any user fee mm-hmm. is you use something, you pay for it, mm-hmm. and then the money that you pay to use it goes to keeping it available mm-hmm. and in good condition for you to use. So that's kind of those two, I think, are the main impetus, you know, behind this whole thing. And it comes out of that parking management plan from a couple of years back to serve two purposes, you know, mm-hmm. rebalance the parking, you know, and underscore of that, you know, help the business owners with more customer churn in the parking stalls, but also to make some money to maintain, you know, waterfront lots. And then the boat launch thing, the boat launch fees, which people have been kind of angry about too, because why do I have to pay to put my boat in the water? Sandpoint hasn't charged to use those facilities, the boat ramps and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the Idaho Department of Recreation has come down and said, like, why are you not charging for this?
That's right, because most of the state is charging yeah. to launch boats. And in fact, that's one goal of the parking lot renovation is to increase the number of places where you can park boats,
right?
Because the state is saying, hey, you need to do some more with your boat launch here. Yeah.
Well, and we've, as a city, tried to go to the Idaho Department of Recreation on a couple things over the years to get grant money or any kind of funding. And the state has come back and said, okay, I mean, we're happy to help you, but you have ways to help yourself that you're not using. Mm-hmm. And one of those critical things is not paying or charging people to get their boats in the water at these, at some of the most, you know, the city beach is probably one of the finest waterfront recreation sites in the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
And it was free.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of closing that, that problem for the city a little bit.
Yeah.
And again, capturing a lot of revenue from out-of-state people. I mean, you go down to the city beach and you see boats and trailers and stuff from Washington all the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you check the license plates. There's people that are just parking there to use the beach. So there are a lot of visitors using that, and this is one way to get them to chip in on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a we're already past our time, but this is a long. This
we
is
knew
a long
that was going to happen, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. You're listening to the KRFY. This is 88.5 FM, and this is Panhandle Community Radio. This is North Idaho News of the Week, which we air every Friday at 8 a.m. and usually stop at 8:30. And we're talking to Zach Hagedone of the Sandpoint Reader about the new parking plan that just went into effect on Wednesday here in the city of Sandpoint. To some controversy,
right.
a controversial launch.
Well, and confusion. I mean, beyond sort of the vocal, which I think is a minority. I mean, the folks we're talking about who were, you know, incensed on the internet are not really, I don't think, representative of the overall feeling. Mm-hmm. And if there is sort of an overall feeling that I picked up on July 1st, because I work downtown, I'm just right here on Cedar Street in the second. And so on July 1st, I took the time to walk around town, hobble around in my boot. I was still wearing my boot that day and sort of like harass people on the street. Like, oh, were you able to use this? Like, what do you think? And then by and large, in fact, not even by and large, all the people I talked to, it was probably like 20 of them or so, were mostly just confused and a little bit frustrated instead of angry. And their confusion and their frustration was in large part due to a very unfortunate software glitch that affected the kiosks on launch day. And from what I was able to get from Welker at City Hall was, you know, on that day there was a software update that was supposed to have gone into effect. They tested these things like the week before and everything worked fine, but the update didn't work somehow. And so when they went online on July 1st, they were defaulting to like a full day. So if you went up and I had Sansere, I wasn't driving. So I had Sansere come out with me and she tested it. You know, she pushed the button, she put in her license plate number. And then the first thing we saw was this $19.19 pop up. And we were both kind of aghast. We're like, what? Why is this saying $19? I mean, this is supposed to be 2 hours of free. Like, and it looked like you had to pay $19. And, you know, people being people, they probably didn't read very closely what was going on with the screen. They just saw that number and said, whoa, okay. And then they walked away.
Yeah.
And I saw people do that because there's a kiosk out across the street from our office and my office has a window and I could watch this one kiosk all day long and I had my binoculars out and I was spying on people and I was watching their body language
with the boot on up on the, very James Stewart.
Yeah, exactly. It was rear window.
Yeah.
And I saw people and I saw them get out of their cars and they wander over to the kiosk, you know, like good citizens, you know, cause they're trying to follow the rules. And I'd watch them sort of like push the button and then push the buttons to get their license plate number. And then I'd watch them just kind of stare at it.
Yeah.
And then they would look around as if there was somebody who could help them and there wasn't. And then they would kind of stand back and they'd put their hands on their hips and they'd push the button again. And then, you know, they'd spend a solid, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes out there trying to figure out how to do this thing. And I'd see them throw their arms up and then sort of walk off and go to wherever they were going. I actually saw one couple get into a fight over it. They were obviously from out of town. They rolled up in their, you know, nice car with a bunch of stuff on top, like going outside or something. And the husband and wife, I'm assuming, got out and started trying to do it. And they were just yelling at each other at one point. So there was a lot of tension, you know, among some relationships over these things.
Downtown parking creating marital discord.
But but that was no fault of the city necessarily. I mean, that was a problem with the software, and so it was defaulting to that that big number that people saw, yeah. and that turned them off immediately. But if you stood there for a minute and actually like read what was going on, you would see that it was telling you for 6 hours or whatever, like whatever the maximum amount was, mm-hmm. at whatever time you logged in. There's a little minus button down there. You could push the minus button and it would reduce the number of hours that you were plugging in, and you could get it down, but then it would go only to 3 hours. So it wouldn't even give you the 2 hour option.
It wouldn't get to the free mm-hmm. option.
And it would have another like $3 or something on there.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is this? Like, why is it $3? Because mm-hmm. I mean, it's free parking is supposed to be free. Like this $3 isn't free. And what that was it was retaining also the fee, you know, for the payment that you would eventually make if you overstayed. Uh-huh. Only if you overstayed. So they got it all. I mean, they had a guy come in, like a technician. He ran around like manually updating them as fast as he could. And then the software update that had supposedly was going to go in before went into effect at like 3 p.m. that day. And so everything was back to where it should be, hopefully by the end of the day. And the way it works now is the way it should work, which is you pull up, you go to the kiosk, you push the start button, you enter your license plate number, and then it will automatically give you like, okay, 2 hours starts now, $0. And then you just walk away.
Yeah. And all it requires is the license plate number.
Right.
It doesn't connect that to any personal information.
There's no, you don't have to tap your card, you know, like your credit card or anything. Yeah. But just like any meter, you know, you park, you do your thing, gives you 2 hours, you go do whatever you're going to do. You have to remember that your time is up in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Just like any, like.
But there is going to be a phone app, or there is already, that you could, if you were going to take longer and you're in the restaurant, you could use your phone and pay the $3, right?
Yeah. And I haven't used the app yet, but, and that's something to remember too, is like we keep talking about it as if the only way you can do this is if you walk up to a kiosk and like tap your card on it, but you can use that app and you can just get in there. I haven't used it, like I say, but I presume you can just say, okay, add another hour, or you can run out and, you know, tap your card on the kiosk, and then you can use the plus button to add however many hours you think you might need.
Or move your car.
Yeah. But this is also something else to remember, too, is that the kiosks are not tied to individual spaces. So the kiosks are basically nodes that you can go to, and any one of them is going to give you 2 hours anywhere in that zone. So it's not like, like the old days where, you know, you'd park on First Avenue or whatever, and then 2 hours are up, you'd get in your car, you'd park 3-4 spaces down.
Yeah, you'd and then roll forward one.
I mean, and that's the 2 hour shuffle that people would do all through the sort of downtown court. That isn't going to work anymore. You have to get out of that zone, and you get 2 hours of free parking per day in that zone.
But you could move to one of the other zones, which is a block or two away, where there's 3 hour and 4 hour parking, and there are no kiosks there.
No.
So
those are treated as, you know, just like they always were.
Yeah. So
how's enforcement going to work? Well, are you aware of that?
From what I understand, you enter your information and you're in the system, and then we're still going to have sort of community resource officers going around checking cars, but it's only going to require about half as many officers or half as much effort because they can go by zone, I guess. And so instead of like walking around like they have been, where they digitally have this little machine and they like digitally take a shot of the stem valve or whatever on the car.
Yeah.
And then, you know, car by car by car, now they can get like the entire zone, and the zone will tell them this car is overstayed, this car's overstayed, this car's overstayed.
Right,
I'm sure it'll be quite automated, actually.
Yeah, and Lieutenant Aerney, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but he's in charge of the Community Resource Officer Program in the city, and therefore parking enforcement falls under him. He spoke at the June 30th meeting with the DSBA and was pretty positive that this was going to be a lot more efficient and better use of officers' time to use this system. But again, you know, as he said at the meeting, the proof's in the pudding, so we'll have to give it a couple of weeks or months to see if it actually is. But as it stands and the way it's been designed, he says, yeah, this is going to be great for our officers. And another thing to remind people, too, is that they don't even do enforcement on any spaces after 5 p.m. So a lot of people were concerned, like, well, I have to pay 2 hours, or I have to pay for my parking to go to the Panada now. I was like, well, if a Panada show starts after
if it's a matinee,
you're fine.
But yeah.
And it's like my own wife, she took the kids to the 1776 musical last night. And if they're listening, I think they might be driving to Coeur d'Alene. So hi there. they went to the 1776 musical last night at the Panada, which was packed. And she's like, oh my gosh, do I have to pay to go? I was like, no, after 5 p.m., you're good. Mm-hmm. And you can park anywhere you want, and there's no time limit.
And if even if you park at 4 p.m.
You still have the 2 hours. So you could park somewhere at 3 and then just wait it out, you know, and then you're not paying anything at all. And the city and Lieutenant Irony was also like, okay, you park your car after 5. We're not going to write you a ticket at midnight if it's still there. Mm-hmm. And nobody's going to get a ticket anyway until 9 a.m. the next day. Mm-hmm. They only enforce from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. So while there's no overnight parking sort of statement on a lot of these signs, the reality is they're not, I mean, there's nobody's going out there checking cars at 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock
in the
morning.
If you've been in your car there, maybe it's an issue.
For days and days. Yeah. I mean, that's really what that's intended for. It's not to, you know, zap people who maybe go to the bar or whatever and don't want to drive home.
Is there another, I mean, you know, the point here, I think that I want to emphasize is that there is a, this is an ongoing issue with the city making changes.
Right.
And I mean, I know we have listeners who are city employees who do hard work and try their best to get the word out. They're talking to you at the paper. They're talking to the B. They're talking to us at this radio station and the other radio station across town. But there are still always people when there's a major change at the city who feel that the city has not done a good job of explaining what's going to happen. Right. And there's an uproar. Sometimes there's a picket line. I mean, the most recent time is this. Before I think the James E. Russell Center was the last really significant change at the city that drew this kind of public outrage.
Right. And I don't know how you solve that problem.
That's my question. Is there something that the city could be doing that they're not doing in terms of public outreach to smooth these kind of changes over when they come? Because the city hall, city council meetings are public,
right?
And people can go and learn what's going on at the city, but somehow it seems to always, there's a change coming and it comes as a great surprise to a lot of people somehow.
It's kind of a problem.
That's a problem.
Human nature problem from a lot of people that just aren't, you know, they're not reading the media.
They're reading attention. Facebook. They're on Facebook. The chronically online, I think, might be the issue that we're addressing here. I mean, the city council and city hall has actually, I mean, I give credit where credit's due. I mean, they tried really, really hard to explain this all along the way.
Yeah, we had at least, I think, 3 times we had the mayor and Jason in and talking about this, among other things. And there's a webpage on the city website. If you go there, there's like a 5-minute explainer video that actually in 5 minutes, it'll give you the picture pretty well.
Right. And again, those meetings, you know, they're 5:30 p.m. at City Hall on Wednesdays. Planning and zoning meetings are 5:30 p.m. on Tuesdays. This thing went through both of those bodies numerous times. They had, you know, those workshops, they were surveys, they were speaking to community groups. And the other thing too is, like, I mean, even if you can't go to the meeting, you can watch it remotely. You can just log in on Zoom. And if you can't do that, they record those and put them on YouTube, so you can watch them after the fact.
Or they could read your excellent story. That takes a fraction of the time and get the whole gist of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I do it, so you don't have to.
There's a good story in this week's Reader on this, so pick up the Reader. And if you're looking for information about why it is and what it is, there's a lot of information right there.
Yeah.
And we are over time here, Jack.
Well over time.
Yeah,
I guess we got to sign off. But we'll have to leave it there. I think, you know, it would be worth us having, even though, as I just said, they've done a lot of work to try and inform people, it'd be worth us having Mr. Welker, Mayor Grimm, back into the studio at some point to answer some of these questions, because obviously there is still confusion about what this parking system means.
Now that it's in effect, I think people are going to be coming up to speed pretty much more quickly.
Yeah, they're not even going to really enforce these for 2 weeks. We should note that too. The city is like, you know, you can be as confused as you want to be. We'll give you 2 weeks to figure it out. Nobody's going to get, you know.
Yeah.
And then after that, what I understand, they're probably be pretty lax. There'll be warnings rather than tickets for a while.
Yeah.
While people get accustomed.
Well, Yeah. I mean, if I, not to opine too much, but it does seem like there must have been something that they could have done to alleviate a little bit of this confusion. I have a few ideas. I mean, I would say, could you on day one or for the first week have Officer Friendly down there, you know, going from kiosk to say, this is how it works, this is what it is, explaining in person to people actually using the system.
I did see an officer out on July 1st interacting with people all up and down First Avenue and Second Avenue. So, I mean, there was at least one person out there.
Yeah. I don't know that they needed to roll out the whole parking. This is a further opinion. I don't know that they needed to roll out the whole parking plan at once. And I wonder if they had just installed the kiosks and not tried to implement the permits on the same day, how the response would have been.
It's hard to say.
Hard to say.
Well, when we had Jason and Jeremy, and they, this was, what, 2 weeks ago? A week before this went into effect. And they had sold 800 permits by that point.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were getting the message.
And I heard 2,000 on June 30th at that meeting.
Okay, so that many more came along. Yeah.
Well, okay. Big chunk of the population. All right. I'll stop opining now. We'll get the Andy Rooney segment is over on this edition of North Idaho News of the Week. Thanks.
Who's Andy Rooney?
We're dating ourselves.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Okay. That's my two cents. Thanks for listening, though, to North Idaho News of the Week. Hopefully, folks have learned something or can take something away from this. Stay tuned for Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long after that. Next week after this show, you can probably tune in, and at 8:30, you will hear a new program to follow this program, North Idaho Climate News. That's not going to be a weekly show. That'll be about once a month, but a new volunteer broadcaster has, come forward with a new program, and
that's great.
Little more than a weather report, talking to local. I think his first edition is going to be talking to a local farmer about how things have changed for them in over the course of their time here in North Idaho. All right, folks, here we go. Off to Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thanks again for listening. Zach, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah.